It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
The Super Bowl.
What about it?
It's a big football game, probably the biggest one.
American football.
And anything to do with this podcast has zero affiliation with the Super Bowl or the NFL at all, as is the case with a lot of places. Though a lot of places do like to come up with things like pizza places and things like that, and you know, grocery stores sell a lot of food that you might have at a Super Bowl party, which is generally an informal gathering of your friends to watch the game called the Super Bowl.
Mm.
Now, if the world has taught me anything, we are about to be sued into oblivion.
Just by talking about it?
By saying the words Super Bowl.
Really?
I feel like I've talked about this on here because this comes up every year, and I have no new information, but it only comes up once a year, so it like bugs me. There appears to be a belief, an urban legend almost, I assume, that the NFL is so litigious that you cannot use the words Super Bowl in any conversation that is going out there, particularly any sort of commercial or anything, including contests in which the prize are tickets to the Super Bowl. Everyone always calls it the big game. And I don't understand it. At this point, what I believe is going on was at some point, someone believed this, and it became such a thing that now I don't know that anybody believes it anymore, but everyone sort of does it ironically, I guess. Just today, I heard it with something that was a pizza place who had done a deal that is specifically useful for having like parties, and they even specifically said this could be great for the big game. And it brought it all the trauma of my life flooding back. But I remember radio stations who had contests where you would go to the Super Bowl and they couldn't say it. Or they did. They thought they couldn't say it. They said, you can get two tickets to the big game. And it's always been a thing. And I don't understand it. And it keeps me up at night for like 5 minutes every year, but those 5 minutes are rough.
Mm.
I don't get it. I mean, I get part of the top is just to sort of break us into things, and often it's less significant. But if you give me absolutely nothing to go on, they become very short. So, hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world not affiliated with the NFL. Literally every other one. So just keep that in mind when you're thinking about watching the big game. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 619. Super Bowl.
I like to guess now what it actually is when you say it, and I was only 400 off this time.
Super Bowl's 2 weeks from this Sunday, isn't that right?
I know. I considered saving this for later, but
do we even know?
I don't know. No, and actually, I don't know if it's even determined completely at this point. I don't know if they're gay. I am ethically opposed to football.
American football.
American football. Full stop. For multiple reasons. But I mean, the biggest is that we basically convince people that their one shot at things is to damage their brain. And we now have enough research to know that it even starts kids who played high school football for like a year still have fucked up their brains. Sometimes in small ways, sometimes in only in ways that you can determine afterwards in autopsies, but still happens. And I think it's gross, and I think the way it is managed is gross. And that's setting aside the economic tyranny and swindling and the Amazon levels of bullshit towards your fellow man that is the money surrounding professional football and college football and everything we do. So I, at this point in my life, no longer am just not interested, but I actively avoid anything to do with American football, such that I was kind of uncomfortable when I went to see the kid next door. He's a cheerleader, and we went to see one of the football games, and I mean, I'm mostly fixated on his stuff, but I was kind of disconcerted. But you know, whatever, y'all do what you can do. I also come from a part of the country that is less focused on high school football.
Oh,
that's much more a thing in this part of the country. And I think in general, much more thing in more rural areas overall. But
are they focused on something else or not anything in particular when it comes to high school?
Yeah, I don't know. If they were, I didn't know. I mean, and don't get me wrong, it was still a thing. And I think my school were state champions at least one year while I was there. I don't know. But like, the game I mentioned that I went to this fall that the kid was cheerleading was literally the first American football game of any kind I've ever been to. And probably only the second or third, if not the first, high school sporting event I ever went to, including when I was in high school. See, well, this is all compounded on the fact that I don't give a shit about sports. And then there's, yeah, so.
I played football in junior high.
That explains a lot.
And I had the one job that, you know, looking back, I realized of all the positions in American football that I could have had, it was probably the only one I could have managed. And yet even that
equipment manager.
No, I was a defensive end. My job was to go tackle the quarterback. This is the only thing I could possibly be good at because I was tall, but I wasn't big enough to be on the defensive line, really. I wasn't fast enough or anything enough to like be a receiver of any kind, a back of any kind. And I couldn't throw to save my life. So, you know, if I just had one person to target to go after, and it was defense, because I was pretty good at defense in most games. I can't think of any other position that I could possibly play, but you've got to be relatively fast. And I've never been fast. I was always getting to the quarterback long after the ball was gone. I mean,
you were like, Bill, maybe you don't understand the rules.
But what made me good at the position was, again, it didn't require me to do anything that I couldn't in principle do. And I could take down anybody very easily because I was tall and I had my legs were strong. So I could easily take down really anybody. They couldn't, nobody could stand up if I hit them, but you had to get there in time or it wasn't, you know, and I just wasn't fast enough. So
I was strongly encouraged from junior high through high school that I really was sort of wasting myself by not doing football. And they looked at me the same way that everybody looked at me in these situations, which the one time in my life I did play football.
Oh, you did?
I played, well, when I say one time, I mean one time. I participated in a pickup game with my brother and his friends when I was visiting him. Because my brother is 11 years older. And so as he becomes an adult and things, I would sometimes just go hang out with him for the weekend. So he lived up in Portland at the time. And I would go hang out and, you know, all, and he had all of his rowdy 20-something housemates and they would, you know, teach me bad habits and things. But one time we went out and played a pickup game football. So it's me and a bunch of me at probably 13, maybe even a little younger, and a bunch of men ranging from their young or early 20s to, I'm going to guess, early 30s. Because it was just a whole bunch of people, like some from work and various things like this. And they did this really. So they just threw me in the middle in the one position that everybody believed I had, because I had no strength and I had no speed. What I had was mass. And so I was a defensive block. And they did not pull any punches. And I went home feeling like I'd fucking dislocated my shoulder. Because they would just slam into me. And I was big enough that I could kind of hold them back. But I was small enough and weak enough that it hurt like hell.
Yeah, there. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's physical, you know, like I was saying. One of the things I was able to do, because even, I'm not that tall by Iowa City standards, but where I come from, I was pretty tall. So, you know, there was always someone.
They don't get a lot of calcium in Melcher, Dallas.
I don't know what, I can't explain it. I was freakishly tall in Melcher for some reason, but not so much here. But, you know, it was my job to go after the quarterback, and it was one of the guys on their side's job to stop me, and they never could. I mean, I didn't knock him down or hurt him or anything. I could just push them out of the way. I mean, they were just little to, yeah, you know, and I'm a skinny guy. So it wasn't, not because I was strong. I was just, you know, when a person's tall and lanky like that, you have to hit him in just the right place. And it's a really narrow thing. And I could just go right around him, but I still was too slow. It never got to the quarterback in time, but I played basketball too. And I was in band. So even if it was a game that I wasn't playing in, I was there playing in the band. So
I did
all kinds of games.
2 years of soccer in elementary school, one semester of track and field in junior high. I was field, unsurprisingly. And that's it. Well, I did orchestra and choir, the other two musical groups that weren't required to go to any games.
What did you do in track and field?
All the big guy shit. I mostly did shot put, but did a little. We didn't have hammer throw, or I would have. I did some discus and things. When we actually competed, I did shot put. But
how'd you
did a lot of trying to. I mean, I didn't win anything. I wasn't strong. That again, like that. This was like the late 80s, early 90s. Where we were starting to realize that maybe fat people didn't just have to be a joke, but we hadn't got there yet very well. So we were like, fat, it's like big. Big's like strong. So you're strong, right? No. Well, physics, if you can get that shit moving, like it'll kill somebody, right? So yeah, we didn't really know. I do not remember how I got talked into this. Was not my thing. I have to assume it was over a girl, because it almost always was for pretty much everything I did until last week was because of a girl.
Well, what I wanted to play was baseball, but baseball back in Melcher was pretty political. I wasn't going to. Nobody was going to let me play baseball.
Because you weren't Dominican? I don't understand.
Now it's the baseball, if you're going to play even for high school ball, it's over the summer, right? And because it's over the summer, at least my observation was, because it was over the summer, there ended up being less oversight about what the coaches and stuff were doing. So, so they could play their sons, you know,
so
they could
play. You weren't friends with the dude whose dad was coaching.
Right.
So you didn't get choose to do.
Right.
I see.
But the one thing I was good at in sports that wasn't baseball, I mean, I don't think I was really that great at baseball.
Explaining the rules.
I just wanted to play it. I wasn't that good at it. But one thing I was good at in sports was defense in basketball. But this was before Dennis Rodman, when people thought defense in basketball was cool. Before Dennis Rodman, if you couldn't shoot and make a shot, nobody cared about your defensive skills. But I had really good defensive skills. You know, they'd often put me in when the team was down a lot of points, because there was like one person on their team who was scoring, and they said, "All right, Bill, go in there and stop that guy." And I would. I'd keep
that
person.
That's what they told you.
It's what happened. I'm telling you what happened.
Yeah, but your team was down a lot of points. They put you in. You stopped them from getting too many points. That I believe. They put you in because of that first thing, and they were like, "What the fuck have we got to lose?"
No, they knew. They knew I could stop.
They were like, "That's like Rudy. You were Rudy,
that game,
but like every game."
No. Usually, I'd foul out too because I was a little too aggressive. But usually, by the time I was out, we were back on top, and sometimes we won those games. So that's what they did. That's how they used me. But here's true though.
Back when we used to record in the same room, he punched me a lot.
I think I told you this story. This is how good my defense was. So one time I actually got the ball, which I should never get the ball. I should only block shots and steal the ball.
I knew that the moment I met you. I'm like, this dude should never get the ball.
I should never get the ball. I should block shots. I should steal the ball from other people, which I did a lot. That's also why I fouled out a lot. But I got the ball, and I was right underneath the basket, right underneath. Easy shot. Put it up. Didn't go in. Got my own rebound, which if anyone's ever played basketball, they know that's actually kind of hard to do. Put the ball up. Missed. Got my own rebound. I rebounded.
Everybody went and sat down.
I rebounded like five times. One time is hard, but I was able to rebound. I mean, I'm sure when halftime came, that coach said, "How did you let that guy rebound his own missed shot five times?"
And they
times?
Were like, "Did you see his eyes? He's got nothing else going on. It's very clear."
But I made it finally.
Like I can't confirm because I don't know the school, but I'm pretty sure this is his make-a-wish.
I don't know if I had a reputation or not, but I know I found
out. Oh, I'm sure you had a reputation.
But yeah, but it's the only thing I was good at. And for some reason, when I was on the basketball court, I mean, I don't think, you know, certainly I'm sure neither you nor any of our listeners think of me as an aggressive person. But on the basketball court, I was pretty aggressive.
Just trying to hold on to that last vestige of tall white guys in sports.
I don't know what it was.
Like, they're just not going to take this from me. Fuck you, Globetrotters.
I just had the mental attitude.
That was your dream as a kid, right? You wanted to be a starting player on the Washington Generals.
No, I mean, I didn't really like basketball that much. I don't know. I have no idea why I played. It was probably because I wanted to do something and I didn't feel like I could play baseball like I wanted to. And I wasn't there was only one position that really made sense for me in football, and I wasn't good at that. I did do track, but as I said, I was never very fast. I did have good endurance though. I could run the long races, and I could run the long stretch in a relay and do okay. Our relay team won races a lot of
times.
Are
you the POV from that "Put Me in Coach" song? Is that you?
I don't know.
Put me in, coach.
But in basketball, for some reason, when I got out on the court, my psychological attitude was that ball belongs to me and I'm going to get it. And so I did. I took it away from people and I was tall. So when you grab the ball and you can't take it away from a person, you know, they blow the whistle and then you have to jump for it. Well, I was always taller than whoever I was jumping against. So I'd always get the ball if I could get a jump shot called or whatever. But sometimes I'd foul them and that would be bad. I'd foul out of the game.
I'm very uncomfortable with this.
What?
Because what you are describing is so antithetical to literally every point of data I have about you, from personal knowledge and stories you've told and just like everything. To the degree that you are forcing me to consider the possibility that demonic possession really is a thing, and you were just like possessed by something when you were playing this, or even less likely that you're lying right now. I'm more likely to believe demonic possession is real than that you're lying, but those are also the only two possibilities that make sense.
I mean, I was also the first guy down the court. I mean, I had a lot of hustle in basketball, but
you having a lot of hustle, I'm not surprised about. You being aggressive and frequently fouling out thinking that ball is mine. You ever thinking anything, be it conceptual, physical, honorary, that anything is yours, flies in the face of everything I know about.
I admit it. It's the only time I can think of in my life where I had that psychological attitude. Not even in any other sports.
You were possessed. I think you were possessed.
Like when I was running track, I didn't think about the competitors at all.
Did someone slip an orange ring with the picture of a lantern on it on your finger just before each game?
That's a good one. That's a good one.
I felt good about that one.
No, I don't. I can't explain it. I mean, when I played football, I wanted to tackle the quarterback because that was what my job was. But I don't know if I felt the strong motivation, or I might have been fast.
See, this one I can picture. In that one, you're in the full outfit.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And you're just running and you're like, but you can't get there. That absolutely jibes with my view of you.
Right, right.
But you like, not in my house, motherfucker. Bam! Like in basketball, I'm not seeing it. I'm not, unless you're possessed.
I mean, you know, sometimes... I mean, the way I would foul out most of the time was someone would be taking the ball down the court and I'd have to really run to catch up with them. And as I said, I was never very fast, but somehow I could catch up with guys on the court. I don't know how I did that. Maybe because they were slowed down by the fact they had to dribble and whatever.
You got to be the shoes.
Yeah. So I could catch up to them and then, you know, they'd do a layup and I would just try to block it without touching them. But often I did. And then we'd kind of run into the wall and fall on the mat and stuff. I didn't hurt anybody.
This tracks more because what I'm hearing is you weren't very fast, but even more so, you were bad at stopping. And so you just built up enough momentum that you just had no choice.
I mean, I could block shots without touching a guy. I didn't have to foul out, or I didn't have to foul them to block
my
a
brother
shot.
My brother also
sometimes I did.
Played a lot of high school and junior, I think junior high basketball. That's yet another way you kind of remind me of him.
I can't think of any other situation I've ever been in where I had that sort of, you know, mindset like that.
If you're just listening for the first time, we're not a sports podcast. And trust me when I say I'm disgusted by how this has gone so far as well. What actually happens is that we have a hat. It is magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And wonderful, beautiful, attractive listeners write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with pretty much anything they want, as long as it doesn't have like literal hate speech. The hat, because magic, forwards them to us and we read them and we talk about them. and that's it, except when we don't feel like it, which is a surprisingly large amount of time. So, yes, many, many thank yous to you all.
Yep.
So, I'm not even going to ask you how your week was yet. I'm going to ask, do you notice anything different about me?
You look a little more like a Dark Lord of the Sith than usual.
Yes.
Just a little more.
In the last week, I've turned evil. Mm. And it changed the color of my hoodie to black.
The like effect my is
soul.
The effect is spoiled a little by the white in the inside. It should be black.
It's because it's fluffy and warm. It's so nice.
Oh, I see. Even the Siths need to be comfortable.
I'm evil, but comfortable. I think I told you I accidentally fell down a YouTube rabbit hole of a lot of Star Wars lore recently, including a video that described every single color of lightsaber and what it meant. Mm. And they mean every, because the last like four, well, actually the one right before the last like four was a lightsaber that they're like, we only know of one person to ever have this color lightsaber, and it's canonically the main character from Jedi Fallen Order, the most recent Star Wars video game. Right. And then the four after that were all, we know of no one to have these. These are just colors you can choose as you play the game, but canonically they are not what that character has.
Mm.
So that's how thorough they were getting. Yeah, and I've a lot of history on the Sith and the Mandalorians and all sorts of weird shit. Anyway, as few people know, but Morgan Freeman knows, my birthday was this Saturday. You know what's hilarious? What's even more hilarious about that? We should let everybody get in on it. William texted me on my birthday a picture of Morgan Freeman, says, "Hi, I'm Morgan Freeman, here to wish you a happy birthday." And you just read all of this in my voice, which I did. My sister-in-law's birthday is the day after mine, and I absolutely re-gifted that to her. And she's like, yes, I did.
Yeah, you do. Of course you do.
Even when I talk about it, I do it as a very bad Morgan Freeman impression. But my mother, who some of you may recall, is the one who gave me the original hoodie that I love so dearly, got me two more. But this time she decided to go for more muted, respectable ones, under the impression that these are what I should wear out in public now. And I was like, hell no. This is my at-home hoodie now. Because the other one is my going out on the town, because I get compliments literally every time I go out, including compliments from medical professionals who attempt to recoup benefit from the medical tasks they have performed by forcing me to tell them where to get it. Somebody who took my blood was like, well, now you can pay me back, which I'm like, by telling me, because they were very serious about it. So this is now my at-home one. The third one is a gray one. It looks very similar, but it's a little lighter. Through sheer accident, I no longer own that one. It is co-owned by Trish and Addie, who you know as Gus. Because when I got them, they're very soft and fluffy, but of course that wears off over time. But you don't notice if you're having it there. Kind of like it's hard to notice somebody's grown up if you're there seeing them every day, kind of thing. But then I put on the new ones. I'm like, oh, these are so much softer. These are so, and I'm like, Trish has never worn a hoodie. So I handed her, I'm like, you should try this on. And instead, she's just sitting on her couch. She just puts it over her like a lap quilt. A couple days later, I did bug her and she actually put it on to go outside. And she liked that. But now she sort of kept it and uses it mostly as a lap quilt. But then when she goes to bed, Addie likes to sleep on her couch and he loves curling up in that thing. So It lives with them now, but I have this stuff. Yeah. So I had a birthday.
Now, how'd it go?
Pretty good. We went out to Orchard Green, and I ate all of the things. Trish was being responsible, and she like didn't get a appetizer or didn't want to share anything with me because she wanted dessert, and she knew she'd get poopful. She only ate half of her entree. I got an appetizer for myself. I got a pretty good-sized entree, which I ate all of. And then dessert showed up, and I ate a whole dessert, and then she ate half of hers, and I ate the other half of that. And I left there very full, but very happy. And her gifts all were sort of a theme of wok cooking, because I like cooking with a wok, but we don't have a good wok. We have one of those woks that's just a pan, like the bottom's just flat. So part of it is she gave me an IOU for an actual wok, because she's like, there's different kinds and they do different things and you should be able to pick it yourself. So I'm going to get to pick that. But she also got me some of those like ketchup bottle things, like the ones that you can fill yourself.
Sure.
Which I'm going to use for a lot of things, but they particularly are good for dispensing oil into a wok. That's why she got it. She also got me one of the weird sort of curved spatulas you use in a wok. Got me two sets of the long chopsticks that you cook with, which I'm very excited about because I've used the regular ones for cooking something sometimes, and this is even better. And she got me what's J. Kenji Lopez Alt's book cookbook on cooking with woks. And J. Kenji Lopez Alt is my favorite chef at this point. I steal a lot of ideas from him. The chopped cheese I make, one of my signature dishes, is a variation of one that he came up with.
Nice.
So I'm very excited about all that. And then the house itself bought me a gift in the form of ice cube trays. And I was also very excited for this, because our fridge is slowly but surely dying, and it leaks water all through it, and it causes a lot of problems, and it freezes up, and I have to all sorts of things. And I now am pretty sure it's about the ice. And so I'm doing an extended experiment of not using the ice maker, which means I need ice trays. So I grab a couple that we still have, but they are very old, made of shitty plastic, old enough it might be Bakelite. I don't know. So like the first time I used them, they froze, and I took them out and I twist to open them and they snapped. So the house got me the next generation of ice cube trays that actually we encountered when we stayed in Wisconsin at that cabin. They had these, and I commented there how much I loved them. Part of it, they have a lid. They each have a plastic lid that goes over, so you can stack it even when they're not frozen. But the big thing is you don't twist them. They all, the bottom like third of it is actually made of soft silicone.
Right.
And so you just pop them out, and I love it. And so I got those now, and my life is sad that excites me like it does, but it does. So.
Well, that all sounds really cool. Do you have a wok in mind or that you?
I don't yet. She did some research because originally she thought she would buy me one. So I'm going to check with her, but I'm very big on, it's not going to be one of the flat bottom ones.
No, right.
I need a proper one. But we'll see. All right. That was a little detour here before I ask you, how was your week?
I mean, we've watched some stuff, but I was thinking about this earlier about how when we started the podcast, we like very early on, we thought, hey, I know one thing we can talk about before we draw questions. We can talk about the media we've consumed all week. And it's like, I almost never am interested in doing that because I don't remember what I've seen, or I don't have anything. I don't think I have anything interesting to say about what I've seen. And now that school has started, like, school this week is going okay. But you know me, I like to be really ahead of things, and I'm not. I'm just kind of getting things done right on time,
well,
which is fine.
Your wife has finished Fallout Shelter, as near as I can tell.
Yeah, she finally platinumed it.
And Azutalon, again, a huge liar. is continuing to play Horizon Forbidden West at the same rate he played it before, despite him having said in a comment on an earlier episode that he finished it. So I'm confused. But I also am heavily in now. I am serious in. And
yeah, you sent me a message that you were really enjoying the plot and everything.
Fucking love it. It's I'm really curious. There's a video game review channel that I watch that made a couple different videos about how much they didn't like this game because they thought the main character was a very poorly done character. And as you may recall, the main character from this series is one of my favorites in right. the first game. And I checked with a friend who also really liked it, who had played it, and he said, she seems about the same to me. And she does, so I'm very confused. They're also really, it's still Uncanny Valley, but I play enough video games, I'm used to this. The expressions on the characters are incredibly nuanced. Like, it's to the point now that you really get a lot in their non-verbal communication, not just their verbal, which is not something video games have been able to do for very long.
Right, right.
But at this point, like, I will get a lot more out of an expression this guy has on his face, even if he doesn't say anything. I know what he means by that in ways that I love. And the main character is a bit stoic, is not particularly social, is a bit taciturn, but that has always been true. And I still get a lot. There could be a sort of a neutral mask thing where I can project myself on her. I don't know. I also, I love these games with such a deep and personal feeling that I can't judge the story and the characters in any way that I consider unbiased. So I don't begrudge anybody not like that. The gameplay, I think I can judge, and the gameplay is pretty good. But that's, and I do like that, but I like the world and the story and the characters so much more and on such a personal level that I can't put that on others. Others may not enjoy it. It grips me in just the right way, but it really does. And we've had, I recently had the second of the big twists of this game, which the last one had big twists too, but I very recently had another, oh, it's not how you think. And
is this your Ted Lasso of video games? Is that what this is?
No, it's my Ted Farrow of video games. Different. Good joke. Good joke. It is in that it's my favorite video game series. I've said that for, I said that when there was only one of them.
Well, you're right. But I mean, I'm talking about your connection to it is a little,
I don't think this game is impacting how I live my life the way Ted Lasso.
That's what I was asking.
This is just a really, really good story. Honestly, the ethics and the morality built into it aren't anything exciting and new, really. And I can't say that phrase without hearing the love boat. But, I mean, it's all there are people who are morally ambiguous and morally complicated, but not in ways you haven't seen before. And there's not a lot of strong message in this that's any different from any other, but the bits and bobs of the story, the lore is just fascinating to me. And it's so many post-apocalyptic stories do a quick little floop over how the apocalypse happened. There was a virus. There was stupid rich white people. It's usually stupid rich white people. There was an alien invasion. There was a sun flare, whatever. And we move on. And we don't talk about that time. And this is set 1,000 years after the apocalypse. But so much of it is about what happened as the apocalypse was about to happen and what happened in the ramifications of what people did to try and protect themselves, or in some cases to try and protect future generations from the apocalypse and competing factions and things. All of that has had vast implications that carry on to this day. So you get down into the details of that in a way. Fallout hints at that kind of thing, but it's often much more sort of just played for color commentary and things. And it has that sort of cutesy, darkly comedic thing that all of Fallout has. This is like, it hasn't happened this time. The story, like literally there's a part of the game where I'm going in the first game where I'm going through a huge sort of dungeon, for lack of a better term, and getting bits and pieces for a huge revelation about it that actually got me to tear up when I was playing.
Mm.
And even now I have feelings about fictitious people in this game as though they were people in real life. Like it's really powerful. And the sheer creativity built into all of this is blows me away. I love it. I'm also learning that story through video game, I always said story is a thing I really like in video games. Story through video game is a different medium that I am learning to appreciate for itself. Not only do I love the story in this, but it wouldn't impact me in the same way if I was reading the novelization.
Mm.
Or watching the movie of it. And I don't think I've given that enough credit over the years. I think that's a thing I really like.
Yeah, I've often thought about what the challenges would be to creating and going ahead and writing a video game story. I mean, man, so complicated.
And there is such a stark contrast between quantity and quality there.
Yes.
Because frequently in a lot of these, you have to write way more than you would write in a story because of branching paths or branching dialogues and things like that. And people do that, and it's a lot of work, but also it needs to not suck. And
right.
Far too often that's the thing. And like the fact that I really enjoyed this story in the same way with Final Fantasy 14. Although I am suddenly finding I really don't care about that game. Not like I'm ready to take a break from it. Like I've been seriously considering just canceling my subscription. I'm like, I'm not sure. I was invested in that story full on for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit this with a lot of video games, even with great story. Just at a certain point, it's like, I'm obsessed. I'm kind of done.
Mm.
I'm starting to feel that with Final Fantasy. I don't know. We'll see. I finished season 3 of Miracle Workers. Still good in a way that you still could never see it, and that would also be fine. But it is fun if you want to see Daniel Radcliffe on the small screen in a comedic role. Miracle Workers is really great for that, and because that's not something a lot of people get to appreciate with Daniel Radcliffe, and it's fun. Finished 3rd season of Doom Patrol. That's another one that is just really, I realized near the end of this season, it was mirroring a lot of things I'm dealing with my own mental health right now. Hmm. And I think I may empathize with the characters more than I had previously. Again, Cliff still ruins the whole show. But outside of that, I was annoyed to discover for 4th season, which I believe is supposed to be the final season, but now I'm not positive of that either. They're doing that. They've released the first half, and then sometime later they're going to release the second half. So I've decided I'm going to wait, which I hadn't planned to do when I thought it was all done. But I'm also waiting. I'm not going to swear to you that I'm going to watch the last season, because I really enjoyed this season. And it ended in a way that felt to me like they weren't sure they were coming back.
Mm.
Like it had, they love to do a cliffhanger right before the next episode, and they really like to do that each season. But it was such a nebulous and sort of generic one that I'm like, that could still be an ending for me. And I felt really good about the ending.
Mm.
So I don't know if I want, we'll see. But at this point, I'm definitely taking a break. I don't know what I'm going to watch next. I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the movie we saw last night.
Okay.
We saw, and I think at this point, I finally can actually say the title correctly, I think. The Banshees of Inisherin.
Oh, I believe
that is correct. You have not seen this? It's on HBO Max right now, is why I ask.
Oh, is it?
Yes, that's the thing. We've been waiting for it, and then it's on HBO. Speaking of, there are two shows that we were watching a while back, and then we saw that there were going to be new seasons of, and we've been waiting for those new seasons to come out. One was His Dark Materials, and one was Avenue 5, both on HBO Max. The other day, when I'm just surfing around looking for a new show to start, I check all my services. Both of those already dropped. I don't know when. They're just out there. The third and final season of His Dark Materials is just out there. I don't know when it happened. And the second season of Avenue 5 is out there too. I have no idea.
I don't know.
That's weird. But we'd been waiting for it, and then it showed. There's been a bunch of stuff, like Amsterdam was like that. Something else where I'm like, oh, it's gonna be in theaters. I hope it comes to some streaming service, and then just boom, it's on HBO Max. They're not doing the thing they did in 2020, but they still are doing a, once it's done in the theaters, we put it on HBO Max for a little while and then take it away. They did that with The Batman, they did that with Black Adam. They've done it with some other stuff. But yeah, so it's out there right now. We were curious because it was the same guy who did In Bruges, which we love, and Seven Psychopaths, which we also kind of love. The end result of watching this is I am very concerned for writer and director Martin McDonagh. Because I looked him up, and he has done a few other things, but primarily he has written and directed 4 major feature films, and that has been his career. They are In Bruges, 7 Psychopaths, 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, and The Banshees of Inisherin. If you know at least 2 of those movies, you understand why I'm concerned. And what I will say is the other 2 you don't know, do not dissuade it. In Bruges and 7 Psychopaths are comedies. They are ultra violent comedies, but they are quite clever and violent in such an absurdist way that they are just unbelievably entertaining. And they have some great actors and some great characters built into them. It's a little bit like, it's a Tarantino level of violence, but a level of cleverness and character and dialogue and humor that Tarantino has never, ever, ever matched. It's just in a combination that I really enjoy. 3 Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri, which I did finally see, is the greatest film ever made that will straight up make you want to kill yourself. It is unbelievable. It has incredible performances. I do not recommend it to anyone. It is the saddest, bleakest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. I think I am genuinely sorry I saw it, because it's just so gut-wrenching.
Is that the one with Frances McDormand in it? And yeah, it is.
Frances McDormand and Woody Harrelson and Sam Rockwell, again, having just come off a beat of saying I should stop playing racists and then going and playing another fucking racist. He's really good at playing racists, but he's getting typecast as a racist, and that doesn't sound good to me.
No, you're right. There's you just can't walk away from that film feeling even a little bit good. No light in that, I mean, at all.
Jojo Rabbit has Hitler as one of the main characters, also has Sam Rockwell as a racist to the degree of being a literal Nazi, and that movie is so much more feel good than 3 Billboards. The Banshees of Inisherin is between those two. Trish said a lot of things that led me to believe she didn't like it.
Oh.
And this morning I said, I'm sorry you didn't like it. And she said, I didn't say that. She said, and I think this is very, very fair, it's complicated. She also took issue when she was looking up stuff later, as we often do, especially when it's a historical piece, which this one is, And she got really annoyed because Wikipedia referred to it as a black comedy. And I'm like, it is. And she's like, no, it's not. And I was like, don't get me wrong. It gets real, real bleak and real, real dark. But we laughed a lot during this movie in the like first half. And I genuinely believe they intended for it to be funny. But it's also bleak as hell. I can get you a good start as to why it exactly it is so bleak as hell before I even touch the plot. It's set on a small island off the coast of Ireland in 1923, near the end of the Irish Civil War. There is one female character with speaking parts in the entire film. Well, I take it back. There's a couple others, but they are very small. There's essentially one female character and then a couple in the background. It is the story of one man who is unmarried and who lives with his unmarried sister in a house, and his best friend who lives by himself and is also unmarried in a different house. And one day, the friend who lives by himself decides he doesn't like the other guy anymore. And the other guy's life is pretty fucked up because of this, because he doesn't have a lot going on, but his best friend. And his best friend has seemingly out of fucking nowhere decided he doesn't like him anymore and literally doesn't want him to speak to him, and eventually goes to very strong ends, drastic ends, to try and ensure that the other one doesn't even talk to him, let alone have any sort of relationship with him. And it's goofy as shit in that respect. And then it proceeds to get real, 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 real dark. I consider it a very high quality movie. I enjoyed it thoroughly throughout. We talked about it a lot, Trish and I, afterwards. I've been thinking about it a lot. There's a lot of nuance to it. I don't have as much difficulty as Trish did, and I think there's a reason for it, and this reason is important in terms of whether or not I would recommend it to someone. I don't believe Irish people exist. Really thought I might get at least a little laugh out of that, but nope. All right, let me backtrack in a much less hilarious and less reductive way, because we all had a good laugh there, but let me explain more accurately what I enough with the guffaws.
I was too busy thinking about how that would explain so many things.
Yeah, no. I do
explain a lot of things. Okay.
I've met Irish people.
Okay.
Some of my best friends are no. I actually have had occasion to study Irish history and Irish culture at several times. In particular, I studied a bit on the conflict in Northern Ireland, mostly through its dramatic literature, but trust me, it's there. And the history and the history of British colonialism for all that, and modern Irish culture and all of that kind of stuff. I do not understand or relate to any aspect of it at all. The general attitudes and cultural values and things are all things that mean nothing to me. There's a lot of masculine identity. There's a lot of religious fervor. There's a lot of violent responses to things that I don't get. There's a lot of family and community that I also don't like. None of this is stuff that I understand at all. So every time I see these things, although the characters feel very real on the screen, it might as well just be a sci-fi film. So I don't get the heartache of like shit, this kind of stuff is real for some people, because it's just so unrelatable to me in weird ways. And I've been trying to parse it the last day or two since we watched this to figure out why it's like this. And full disclosure, we're dealing with a lot of stereotypes here. And I certainly don't want to in any way judge any Irish person I met based on this or make any assumptions. But from what I've been able to gather, these things are built into the culture. And nobody says anybody has to go along with the culture or these aspects of the culture. And there's much more to the culture. There's a lot of history and things, and it's wonderful. But three things I think are very critical involved in this. They are, or were, this is changing in Ireland now, but up until recently, insanely Catholic. And that brings with it a whole host of cultural values. When your religion is baked into your actual society like that, it comes with a lot of cultural values that I do not relate to. But Ireland is by no means the only culture that has that.
Right.
It suffered tremendously at the hands of colonialism, which does a lot of things to you. And again, by no means even close to the only country who did that. It's way easier to talk about the countries that didn't have that. There's a third bit, and I'm vacillating a little bit. It is one of the more harsh and non-tropical climates that fall into those first two categories. And like the climate in Ireland, especially in up north, you got hard winters and shit, and you can have famine. There's been some famous ones. Whereas in certain more tropical climes, there's less of that, I think. But the other thing, they might be the only culture I can think of who fits into those first two, the only modern culture, who are white. So they manage to somehow be of the class of people that are the oppressors, yet somehow ended up being the oppressed. And I mean, we witnessed that in this country too. Originally, being Irish meant you were a minority everyone hated, just like being brown or black or anything else. But I think there must be components of that, because there's a lot of bitterness toward the British, absolutely founded, by the way, absolutely justified bitterness towards the British, that I think took longer for other colonial victims to sort of bring into, like I don't know. I feel like they're in a weird position, because part of society lists them as the oppressors because they're the white people, but then clearly they're also treated as the oppressed. I don't know. I'm trying to put this together. I just haven't seen anything like Irish culture, because there are cultures that fit those first two models that I do relate to things in it. Italian culture, certain South American cultures and things. Like, I'll see movies about them, and there are definitely things I don't, but like, it doesn't feel so wholly alien to me as just about every aspect of Irish culture that I understand. And I mean, that's, the more I say it, the more racist it sounds. So I'm sure this is born out of my personal ignorance. Remind me to send you a thing, by the way. I just saw a sketch thing on YouTube of somebody being a teacher, having their first token white student in class, and it's hilarious, and I'm gonna send it to you. But yeah, so it doesn't touch me in the same way, because it's almost it's just so, I'm like, that sucks, but that would not really happen, right? Because it's just, that's the thing. It's like, I can't even get into the mindset. There are plenty of movies and TV and things where I'm like, they're acting like idiots. And I know if I could just sit down with them for 20 minutes, like most teen dramas, I could immediately, like if I could just talk to them for 20 minutes, I could resolve this entire fucking thing. A movie like this, I'm like, I don't, all I could do is sit down and be like, what? Why? What? No. Don't. No. Why would you? I, and then that. No. Why? Huh? That's all I would know how to say. So I guess it doesn't. I didn't get as much emotional trauma, but it's rough. But I thought very good. It's also gorgeously shot. It's filmed in Ireland and it's gorgeous. And the performers are amazing. We were just talking about how in our heads, we all just sort of think Colin Farrell is an action leading man guy because he was for a long time. He hasn't really been for a while, that shitty remake of Total Recall notwithstanding. He's been doing all of these Martin McDonagh movies and like The Lobster and shit. Like he has got some serious dramatic chops and he seems to really be leaning in. And then Brendan... what's his last name? The other lead. I want to say Brendan Glazer, but I think I'm just thinking Brendan Fraser and saying it weird. But Gleason, Brendan Gleason. He's a phenomenal actor. He's always been a phenomenal actor. I love everything he does. And Marie Condon is in it, and she does a great job. The dude who played Druig in Eternals essentially plays the village idiot in this, but like with a lot of poignancy and stuff, and he does an amazing job. But it was really funny because he was doing a lot of stupid and obnoxious stuff and we're just like, Druig sucks, because that is the one true takeaway from the Eternals movie is Druig sucks, because he does.
And when I study Irish and English history and also, when I watch things that like you're talking about Irish or English things, you know, you were talking about how you're watching, you're like, what are they doing? I don't understand. I do that all the time with things, but almost never with things that are English or Irish, because and when I'm reading history too, because I always recognize English things. I can always see a little bit of that in my family and Irish things too. But it's a weird combination, because I mean, I'm sure as you're imagining, it's like those things don't really go together. Like, I know you can understand English things when you watch them or British things. I don't know if you relate to them, but you can understand them.
No, I can, because that mostly comes down to just thinking you're better than everyone else. And I definitely, I like to think in this day and age, I don't believe that. But I can definitely understand.
No, the things in English stuff that I can understand is sort of this. There's a stoic aspect and element.
Actually, I don't relate to that at all. I find that incredibly amusing.
Yeah, very much can relate to that. But with the Irish stuff, for some reason, all the things that you were talking about, you know, and I see those in like Irish or even some little bit Scottish stuff too. Yeah, I totally get it. Because I see this in members of my family, which I can explain part of that by the fact that my family history does go back to England and Ireland. But I mean, that's a long time ago. You wouldn't think a lot of that stuff would carry much cultural weight over time, but maybe it does. I don't know. But I think, you know, going back to what we were talking about with the whole basketball thing, I think that thing what allowed me to go onto the court and say, okay, this is my court, and that's my ball. I think that's the Irish. I see people in my family who do that all the time.
Too many jokes in my head at once. I can't pick one.
I'm just saying that's part of my, I mean, I know that I don't know what people think from what I present, like if they think, wow, that he's like, I can't put William in a particular ethnic box. Some people, because I am rather stoic, would probably immediately think German or English or something.
Or Vulcan.
Huh?
Or Vulcan.
I don't think anyone would ever, based on my behavior, either on this podcast or outside of it. I've pointed out many times that, you know, anyone who knows me just through the podcast doesn't really know me, but for the most part, I am still rather staid and stoic in, you know, all aspects of my life. I don't think anybody would ever think, oh, he was raised by Irish people or was around Irish people. But I was raised around people who have some of the characteristics that you were describing and some of the behaviors and some of the attitudes.
There's some real basic family, community, and faith are three pillars of what I was talking about, none of which I've ever really been steeped in. I mean, I had a close family, but the sense of family as interdependent obligation, which I think is a common one in people who are very into family, was never registered for me. And that's a lot right there. The expression through violence is a whole other issue. And I think that has more to do with me being just the shittiest of men. But I don't know for sure.
I don't know. I mean, that. Yeah. Like,
since a young age, and I'm sure a lot of kids had this, but as I've gotten older, it's never, I cannot fathom a situation where somebody gets mad in like an argument we're having or whatever, and they punch me, and I don't fucking have them arrested. Like, they fucking assaulted me, and I would expect them to do the same if I fucking punched them. But like, that's just the thing. No, they were just having fun. We just need to let, no, you fucking assaulted me, and I'm not being precious about it. If I did it to someone else, I would expect the same treatment. No, that's not okay in my book. There's not a conversation that gets heated enough, or we were drinking enough, that's okay. I'm not saying heated and drinking couldn't cause those things, but it still should have the exact same fucking consequences as it would if anybody else fucking struck me. And that to me is just such a foundational aspect of things like this, that maybe there's a class thing here too. There's almost certainly a class thing, but I'm like, no, you don't get to punch people, and you have to pay the consequences for punching people. Hell,
right where I come from, the consequences is they punch you back. I mean you could,
exactly,
you could call the cops, I guess, but I don't know anybody who ever did that.
No, and the cops wouldn't do anything either, probably. They'd be like you just need to cool off. Probably shake not. Hands,
which I'm like, they'd probably watch. They'd probably say, all right, go ahead, you know.
And here's where I turn, because if you switch out the relationships, and more particularly, if you switch out, say, the ethnicities or the relative economic statuses involved, the police would absolutely arrest an individual who just punched another individual.
Mm.
So the fact that it can be done that way, that it's not equal across the board, tells me I'm not the fucked up one.
I mean,
hell, sorry. I also should put in there, if you change around the genders. Because as my brother-in-law once said, when he was trying to explain how it's difficult to teach his child about not being violent, he said, it's really hard to say you should never, ever punch anybody, but you especially should never, ever punch a girl. And I'm like, you had me, and then you lost me.
I mean,
because maybe I would love for somebody to explain to me why you should never, why it's bad to punch people, but somehow it's worse to punch a girl.
I mean, that seems like a cultural thing.
Yes, it does. Based on incredible institutionalized sexism. Because I'll tell you right now, it is not based on the admittedly common tendency of being smaller and weaker over large populations, because I guarantee you the same people who say that kind of thing would be much better with you hitting a weakling boy than a really buff girl. And in fact, if they were so buff that they could hold their own as a man, it's more of a joke than anything else. Because the rule is, it's not about how big or strong they are. It's about how boy or girl they are.
Well, I mean, some people would argue that the male in the equation always has more power in some way, even if they're smaller.
Yes. You know, that is true. Power. But that doesn't come into situations if it's a big guy and a small guy, or if it's offset the other direction. My point is, the rule has nothing, it is not specifically about relative power. It's about being a boy, being a girl. And yes, I could hear you coming up with a reason why the nature of institutionalized sexism is such that is a type of violence that we need to not propagate. But I promise you, that is not why my brother-in-law or somebody you grew up with is saying
it. No, I get it. So do you think there's a rural, like, is part of my experience and maybe being able to relate to this because I come from a rural background and that's a rural thing?
I think there is a class structure, and rural versus urban is definitely part of it.
Yeah.
And small community versus large community is definitely part of it. I grew up in a city. Yeah, I think that's the thing. Anyway, I've made myself sad. I don't want to talk about this no more. And also, we're out of time. But I have two things I need to sneak in here real quick. One, which I was going to do up top and I forgot. My wife made from complete scratch this birthday card for me.
Oh, nice.
And I want you to take note, it's 3D. The Susie pieces jump out.
I see
and
that.
She made all of them. It's not like these were purchased. She made these and colored them in and everything.
Nice.
Yeah. She's getting real good at that. And the other thing I want to tell is just for you. So,
don't mess with everybody else.
That just were, no, they just may not find it nearly as funny. Although actually longtime listeners will. But it's about you. The Macro Brothers, I still listen to their podcast and I listen to another one of their podcasts and whatever. They have taken to live streaming a video game they play together every Monday on YouTube. Well, I'm sure on various places, but like it ends up on YouTube and I watch it usually shortly after. And initially they were playing Fortnite. And I may have even talked about that. The last few weeks they have switched over to a game called Sea of Thieves, which is a game where you play as a pirate and it's like an open world sort of, not quite MMO, more live service, I guess, sort of pirating game.
Mm.
And they're having fun with this. And they recently were in a situation where they were fighting off some pirate ghosts or whatever, and they were trying to take out this fort, and ghosts were showing up sometimes. And they get very confused by this game. It's a very involved game in terms of the mechanics, and they get very thrown by sometimes. But they were basically frantically fighting and trying to figure out what was happening, basically. Like, why are these ghosts appearing here? What do we need to do related to this? Oh, and they were actually following clues from a treasure map, like a poem clues or whatever, to a certain spot, and they were getting very frustrated. And then at one point, Griffin breaks out the phrase, okay, we have definitely gotten into Mystery of Oak Island territory here. And I was like, I know what that is! The money pit,
yeah.
I was very pleased. But I suppose he might not even be referring to the TV show. He could just know the folklore. I don't know. They're from West Virginia. It's not that close, but who knows?
Yeah, it's pretty famous. Some people who don't know anything about the show still know about the Money Pit. In its 10th season.
God.
I think I figured out what was going on there.
Pay them in room and board, don't they?
I don't know.
You think you figured out what's going on Oak Island?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know where the money pit is?
I don't. There's no money pit. Yeah, what's going on? I think a lot of people were using the island as a sort of a makeshift shipyard for a long time, because, you know, when you sail wooden ships, you have to clean off the hull or it's going to rot out.
I mean, I definitely do.
Well, there weren't a lot of shipyards just in that general area for a long time. And so what people would do, and if you were a pirate or a privateer, you couldn't go to a shipyard or they'd arrest you. So what people did was they went to islands and they cleaned off their ships. Well, all the archaeological stuff they're finding there looks like people probably used the island for that. And it was neutral, because the Acadians, even though they were French, they were neutral. So any ship could probably stop there, clean itself off, maybe replace some parts because of the oaks, and then the fresh water right off the thing. Because they found sites that they think people were producing tar, you know, for ships. And they found wharfs and you know, like roads and stuff. They found evidence that there was a lot of activity going on there before the British came.
Told them.
I mean,
save them some trouble.
There are other people who, you know, like actual archaeologists who are like looking at the evidence and saying the same thing.
So you didn't figure it out.
Well, I thought of it too, but I found out other people had thought of it. I had thought of it also.
Thought of it too.
Well, it's not hard.
After I watched several documentaries,
when you're finding wharfs and all this other stuff, obviously people were, ships
like
were.
Michael Dorn?
Obviously people were like stopping there and doing things. There's evidence that that happened. So what the people working there think is that they were stopping there to unload treasure and bury it in the pit. It's like, no, they were just cleaning off their ship or whatever. They weren't, there was no treasure thing.
I've seldom heard a more charitable use of the term working.
I'm just saying, one of the reasons, actually, everybody there probably also thinks that that's what was going on, but they don't like that as an explanation because it doesn't immediately suggest treasure. It just suggests.
And it's not a TV show. I mean, it's a Nat Geo documentary, one episode at best.
I don't know. I mean, some of the
and
stuff
that's
they
only
find
with a lot of CG to like recreate it
is really interesting. I mean, there's evidence that some Portuguese people were there, some Spanish and some British people at periods of time. What's surprising about it is the record of the British who took over there in like the 1750s. They suggested that that island was sitting there doing nothing until they showed up in 1750. But there's all this archaeological evidence to suggest that's not true.
Yeah.
But all of that,
that's the British.
All that evidence suggests is that people would stop there and fix their boats, basically. But that,
I mean,
just no,
our entire
connection.
Country is based off of the idea that British people were like, nobody was doing anything here.
That's
and,
right.
And
that's
it continuing.
Right.
Nobody was doing anything here. Nobody was doing anything here. We had to move them off of here, but they weren't really doing anything.
But I think it is interesting that, you know, the island was used for that purpose, and that if we look some more, we might get some really interesting information about how, you know, maritime stuff was going on then. And also, the Acadians were very friendly with the native population up there. So it'd be interesting to know how that economy worked, you know, for the native people and for the Acadians, and, you know, what was really going on there would be interesting. But people are so distracted by this so-called treasure that they find all this interesting archaeological information that could tell us a lot about that area and the activities that were going on there before the British really took it over in the 1750s. We can't really dig into it because the people who are in charge of all of that are just thinking about treasure. And there's no treasure. It's an island that people used to clean their ships off, which is interesting to me. I think that's really cool, but we can't talk about that.
If you have an interest in whatever it was, William, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and discuss it with him at length. I won't be there. If you've seen Banshees of Inisherin, Jazz, for example, give me your take on that. How racist am I from pretty to incredibly, because I'm often curious how racist I am. That I'd watch 10 seasons of the show about that. How racist is Tony? It might get a little thin around season 8, but maybe not. Maybe not. Who knows what we could discover?
What we could discover.
What treasure we could unearth about how racist I am. Also, go to the blog and just tell us whatever you want. Also, write in and tell us whatever you want. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. We really do use these things sometimes, I swear. And we don't have any of them right now. Also, go to AetherTheater.com and look at all of William's non-Oak Island-related shit. Also, go to Smashwords.com. Buy my book called Odd Wings. It's only $3. Three, this many. Did I miss anything? Your birthday is going to be coming up soon.
In a few weeks, yep.
And you know what else is going to be coming up soon? The big game.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.